Hello, everybody. Welcome to this year's Points with Patrice.
We're
super excited that a new season is basically upon us. We've had two amazing games last weekend, an open training session. It's starting to feel very, very real. On my left here, we've got, obviously, the amazing Gary Griffiths.
Hello.
And what's your name again, sorry?
Gary Parton.
With the amazing...
Yeah.
I'm assessing Gary. Yes.
We've got our amazing head coach. These guys are... It's amazing that, like, the changes you made to the team last year, the city itself, it's been great to have you apart from the journey here in Halifax. So, first question for you is, it's a long off season. Could you give us an insight into how you spent your time away from Halifax, both in terms of unwinding, if you actually ever do that, after a long season, and preparing for the upcoming season?
Sorry, can I just look at the answers just to make sure I'm reading? First of all, it was the ending wasn't what we wanted it to be, but at the same time, you got to celebrate the highs and understand the lows. So we certainly take that and embrace it and use it to really push more. Obviously, our guys needed to, a lot of them were at different stages with their bodies. They need to do some recovery. And for us, the immediate action was assessing the current squad, looking at who was going to come back and what role we had. You know, for me, I think that one of the most important things is just sometimes a tough, honest conversation with players. And I'd rather just bring players that are going to have a role rather than just bring them in without really any plans for them. And then when we felt the voids we needed was about recruiting and finding them. And after that, we, you know, have done a lot of conversations as a staff. We talked about what we did and where we needed to improve. I think, you know, you look at it, the thing that I'm proud about the most with the group was the guys embraced it. You know, some of the days that we have are scary. I'm not even going to talk about how intense and long they are, but it's all of our guys and of our staff that are putting that in. So they needed some time off, but we did a lot of planning, a lot of prepping, and just getting ready now to come to work. And I think the more planning we can do, the more comfortable our group feels, because we have a lot of guys that are true students of the game. And you could see that they gravitate to a video and to all of our coaches, and they're learning more and more about it.
Awesome. We were sat here a year ago for the first points with Patrice. If you could go back in time and give March 2023 Patrice one piece of advice for that coming season, what would it be?
Don't get mad at the guy at the back who booed me. No. I think it was Jordan. Is he there yet? Yeah, he's the one that booed me. No, you know what? For sure, the thing I would say is when you're right here looking at things at this level, as we all are looking at each other, it's really hard to take a step back and enjoy it. So when I watched the video against Forge and some of our moments, I mean, it was almost like it was scripted. Some of the moments were unbelievable. When I look at the top three moments and I look at the goals, I probably didn't enjoy it as much as I should have enjoyed it. So when I see the video, I'm like, shoot, I don't remember really being super excited and going crazy. So I think taking it a little bit more in is definitely the advice that I would say.
That's awesome. It seems a thing with, like, a lot of managers that they kind of have to focus on the next task. You don't ever get that chance to just soak it all in. So after the dust settled on last season, you would have had meetings as a coaching group to identify areas of the team where they'll be short in 2023. Could you share with us those discussions and what they look like?
Yeah, again, it was some key positions and areas that we wanted to grow at. We had, I think, some ambitions of looking at certain categories that we wanted to improve. And then we targeted players that not only were going to be able to do what we wanted, but culturally fit in. I think what we really, really felt was important last year was the mental toughness. You know, I mean, our travels are, I can't even explain it. They're exhausting. That trip to Pacific is when you go and it never goes as you were supposed to go planned. You fly somewhere, you have a cutoff, it gets delayed 4 hours, you arrive, your bus has a flat tire, your luggage doesn't come. So we really needed guys that were, no matter what, I'll get the job done. So qualify the right people that were good players that wanted to grow. So that was really important for us. And I think like our staff really, we felt more and more connected and comfortable with each other. So, you know, I think last year, because everybody came on very late, most of the things I was just reviewing myself, going through it. So this year, we really looked at it as a committee about the selection of the players that we wanted to return and the guys we wanted to add.
So obviously those problems were with Air Canada and not league sponsor WestJet, right?
Of course, WestJet was amazing. Yeah. Like one time I actually got my own seat, so it was amazing. Yeah. I'm alleged to get lost. So it was, I recommend that heavily. Yes. Yeah.
Patrice, you talk about the debrief that you have to do at the end of the season and how you review what went well, what didn't go well. I'm just interested in how those conversations compare to when you were with Vaughan, because with Vaughan, I guess you always had to look internally for solutions, whether that's tactical tweaks or the mentality around the group you had. But now when you can look externally for solutions with new signings, has that changed the way you approach improving a group?
Yeah, in some ways, I would say, you know, luckily when we were at Vaughan for that 2.5 year, 3 year spell, I think we had like one loss, but and we had more than a loss this year, but it still doesn't take away your reflection of what you did well and what you could have done better. So I think the first thing we needed to do is kind of like just sit down, and what we wanted to do is kind of not overlook anything. So we divided the season into quarters and we looked at what went well and call it quarters or phases, and what did we do well, what we could have done better. And now going back to round two, what we're prepared for. So I think the resources are far more because, you know, we have the availability of multiple video platforms. We have a staff, and Avon, it wasn't really full-time with a lot of people. So now we have a lot more time to take deep dives. And when you assess and you say, okay, the problem was, you know, and obviously for me, the beginning of the season, not to start without a win and having six ties was a way of improving that beginning. But we are doing now more than that and just saying it. So we're reviewing and say, okay, why did we have that many ties? What happened? What were the results? And not just think emotionally about it. Take a step back and review it and look at the numbers. Try to find the statistics, find patterns. What made us successful and what gave us trouble?
I think you're a coach who wears his influences on his sleeve. I know we've talked before about Pep Guardiola, Roberto De Zerbi as being coaches you really look up to. And I was wondering if there's anyone you've watched in the off season, any new coaches who you've seen some of their ideas and thought that's something you could implement with the group we've got. And kind of to use an example, I was at the preseason games the other day, and I just thought Bayer Leverkusen when I was watching it, with three centre backs, two wing backs, double pivot, two tens, and then your striker at the tip of it. And it just reminded me of what Xabi Alonso's doing. And is that something or someone you've been looking at and thinking we can take ideas from there? Or even Denise as well, because I remember you saying on Twitter you were watching Fluminense.
Yeah, and I think, again, we talk about when we do a self-reflection, all these ideas are fascinating. And I like to say hopefully one day comes that we have ideas that other people take from it. I think you take inspirations, but you have to be able to apply it to your environment. So first one is it applicable? And when I mean applicable, it's what do we have the resources and do we have the people really to execute it? So with this year, our group is more mobile and energetic and hungry. So when we look at those, it means like, can we be guys that don't allow our opponents a lot of time? And we looked at teams around the world who are able to do that. And for sure, you know, like, Inter Milan and Bayer Leverkusen are two of the teams who have implemented a different way than they played the previous years. And the path they took has also produced results. They're probably top two teams in top five in entire Europe, right? So you look at it and you say, is that something we can give with our new players and new additions? And then the last step is, does our group buy in? Because no matter what the presentation is, no matter what you want to say, It's not the content that you're presenting to your players. It's what they take away. What is their buy-in? Do they want to do this? So I think for me, when we looked at the Leverkusen style and we presented to our players, you could see all of them kind of get really excited about it. Not that it's just a new toy, because it's something that they've been wanting to do, but there's just so much to do in the past year.
I think it's interesting you bring up the group there, because the next thing I wanted to ask you about was the idea of building a culture within a squad and a club. And obviously you worked very hard last year to build a culture that could sustain a season and could keep the group together. With the new signings this year, and without kind of the benefits of going to Florida and having cooking competitions and things like that, how do you plan on kind of involving them and teaching them about our culture?
Yeah, so step one, we have the core of the group coming back. And what I'm excited with is that the core of the group has done a lot of growing up. Dan and Aiden Daniels and Jan and a lot of guys have probably gained 3-4 years of experience in one season, given all the up and downs and the roller coaster we have. So for me, again, it's important what the coaches can say and do. But if you have the right senior leadership committee in the group, then it changes everything. So having those leaders, we're really blessed. We're really lucky to have them. And I think, again, preseason is far from over. We still got our trip to Toronto, and we still going to Vancouver, and we're going to do a lot of team building exercises. But before we even reported here, we had over 4 or 5 Zoom meetings where we, as a staff, spoke to the new players. We spoke about expectations. We spoke about goal setting. And then we had some with the team. And a lot of our players that came in knew some of our members. So that's really helped us. So I don't think it was as challenging as last year, day one. When we came at day one, we had such a positive feel and a positive culture. And, you know, again, kudos to the guys of constantly staying positive. And look, when you have long days, and I'm sure one or two people have said that I'm a little crazy, and it's okay to argue, and it's okay to get mad at each other, but at the end of the day, we do it because we want the best out of our players. And I've said this to all of our guys, the moment that I stop talking to you and stop pushing you is the day that I've stopped believing in you. So I think, you know, we push, we argue, there's a kick, and then after that, there's a hug. So I think having that respect for each other, and one of our cultural awards this year is respect, is really been key to our positive culture.
So is it difficult to maintain that culture as the season goes on? Because obviously you have players who aren't getting the minutes they probably feel they deserve, and people are put out. So is that something that you depend on your leaders in the team to go after, or is it something that the coach and staff step in and fix?
No, look, we're undefeated right now. We've played 2 games, so everybody's happy. We're in the honeymoon stage. Everybody's like having a good time. There's no arguments. We've not gone, you know, to dark places. We haven't have had any doubts. Everything's great. So, but you're right, there's gonna come a moment where we're challenged, and there's really nothing you can do other than just sticking to our beliefs, right? And what we've said is that no matter what, when the final whistle's blown, we're together, you know, and whatever's happened has happened. On that night, we relax and we regroup the day after and think about what we could have done better. So there's always dark moments. And I actually think that 6-game, 8-game stretch, the bump and bruises, really made us who we became. You know, like what doesn't kill you make you kind of stronger. And it put us to places that we weren't prepared to go to, and we went, and we're like, well, we didn't die, so we'll be okay. We could bounce back and win some games. And, you know, that first win against Winnipeg, and after that, it just kept going. So I think what we rely on, long answer short, is us preparing them before. If you are at a tough situation and you're looking at how do I resolve this, you've already failed. You know, so you got to prepare before, and there's nothing that you could prepare other than saying, hey, we're going to be against it. There's going to be things that happen, but we'll stick together. And that's echoed with you know, with Rampy and Dan and Yan and, you know, Jeremy, who's a great addition and a great leader. And obviously our staff, I think we need to be there to support the guys. But we got to give them their space in their change room to kind of work the kinks out and say, it's okay. You know, we lost, you know, and I think we spoke today actually about it. Our, one of our main goals, and I really believe was the reason where we finished tied for second was, I said day one, we will never lose two games in a row. You don't do that, you're going to do very well. I mean, never lost two games in a row. So again, just stick to those few things and we'll do well.
Awesome. So just moving on to a few of the new signings. We're not going to go into all of them, obviously, but there's a handful that we'd like to kind of go on about. So starting with Vitor Diaz, who's everybody loves straight away. we seem to have collected a group of very technical, very talented tens. What was it about him that attracted you, and what do you think his best position is?
Yeah, I watched Vitor for a few years when he was at college, and Vitor is a player that was drafted by the MLS, and as this journey started, I never thought would be available. He is a reliable player that really enjoys playing. And that's the first and foremost, because a lot of creative tens kind of start either to shy away from the big games, or they don't love doing the, every part of the game. And Vitor really loves that. He's, you know, one of our other things that we wanted to find was a left-footed attacker. So he's left-footed and he has experience. He's won a national championship. He was drafted in the MLS. He played two MLS thanks pro clubs that are big clubs. He wanted a change. He had a lot of options and he came here because he believed in our project of wanting to play football. I think every club in CPL is going to have their own identity of whatever it may be. Ours is we'll try to play, we'll stick together no matter what and see where it takes us. And I think Vitor was attracted to that.
Love it. As I said, like anybody who's watching him loves the way he plays the game. So next up is Christian Valeski. He seems to be like a proper center forward, a proper number nine, like a big target man. What did you like about his game and what attracted you to sign him?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about Christian, you have to also think about a partnership. So for me, the partnership for Christian was, okay, how do we manage him with Thiago? And Thiago's a player that had his up and downs, just like anybody does, including us coaches. Thiago has really committed himself to work hard in the offseason. So we had a lot of choices. I think we looked at maybe 50, really 50 different nines with the different style they play and the type of people they are. And the majority of them were between 20 and 25. We felt that it would create an overlap and some potential issues. So culturally, we looked at Christian, who's played, you know, many games as a pro. He was one of the guys that many mentioned that was always just a bit short of the MLS. He scored 70 pro goals, and he's a guy that's excited to work with Thiago, mentor him, make him better. And obviously, he's a player that at USL, and USL, if you guys have watched games, it's a league that some games are really nice to watch. Some games, it looks like it's like a baseball field. Another game, you know, it's like you see a highway right there. But it's just so up and down. I think he just wanted something different. He wanted to win, and he wanted to play. So I think he really believed in what we were doing. So I'm really excited to have him with us.
Another player we signed is Giorgio Probo, and he's someone, when I was watching him after I heard we'd signed him, I saw him playing as a six, and I really thought he was a Lorenzo analog. And I had some conversations with people where they were like, no, he's a 10. I said, no, he's a six, trust me, he's going to play instead of Lorenzo. And then I went to the preseason game on Saturday and Friday, and he was playing as a 10. So firstly, would you like to publicly tell everyone how wrong I was? And secondly, what kind of player is he?
Yeah, for sure, Gary, you were very wrong.
We know. Always.
I think Gigi's, you know, when you look at his background, it's actually, you know, there's always these great stories that you see. And like his story is remarkable because he played until the age of 18 at one of the world's, and that's a big place, the developing clubs. He was with Atalanta, which has some of the most prominent young players in Italy who've gone. And when you really find out, in no disrespect to anybody, he should have never ended up in the NCAA. He should have never taken that route. But things happened. He got frustrated. He took a route and call it a leap of faith. And here he is, you know, a couple of left hands and a right hand, and he ends up at Halifax. And I think Gigi is an extraordinary person. He's like really the definition of the type of player we want, that wants to get on the ball, but when he loses the ball, he's starving to make an impact to get the ball back. He's cultured, and, you know, he led the NCAA in assists the past 2 years, which is something that just went really below the radar. And, you know, whereas MLS is turning its attention more and more to multi-million dollar players that are established, they're really turning their back on NCAA, and Gigi is an example of that. So I'm really excited to see what he can do. I know he had a long off season, so I think we're going to see him get better every game, and his best will come where we need him in the final stretch.
Yeah, I thought he looked really two-footed, which is weird. Like when you're a kid growing up playing football, your coaches are always telling you, kick the ball against the wall with your right foot, then your left foot. But eventually you move away from that and become one-footed. But I couldn't really tell if he was right-footed or left-footed, which is really impressive. Moving on to the defensive group, I feel like it's a good thing we've kept that core together. We've still got Dan, we've got Kale, we've got most of the fullbacks coming back. And continuity in that position is very, very important. But the big player we did add was Julian Dunn. I remember him from the Island Games, thinking he was fantastic and probably too good for this level. And he eventually did move on to a higher level. He signed in the top tier in Norway. Obviously, an injury kind of curtailed that a little bit. What's your relationship with Julian like? And I guess my other part of the question there is, in all of the interviews he said after he signed, he really bigged up, like, oh, once you're on the phone with Patrice, like, the big sell he gives you is unbelievable. Like he's the most charming man in the world. And like,
don't so I'd ask that question for my wife. I had to beg her. I think it's generally just for sure. It doesn't work for her. So, like, yeah.
But like, what's it like? Firstly, like, what kind of player is Julian? And secondly, like, what is the Patrice sell? What do you tell him?
Well, Derek's here. I'm not sure if you're trying to take my position next year, so I can't tell you the Patrice pitch. No, so Julian was part of one of our most best groups we've ever had at Vaughan. There were the Vaughan 2000, so it had Steph Yates, Noble, like some elite players. And I never really worked with the younger age groups, but I remember Julian, and Julian used to come watch the older guys when he was 10 years old. And when he left us when he was 14, 15 to go to TFC, we always stayed connected. Like, I think for me, it's always important to always talk to the players, and whenever you see them next, see how they're doing, because you just never know. And Julian couldn't be a better example. I do believe Julian is, like you said, elite probably is an understatement. Physically, the test we've done, the results are just like, you feel like there's some mistakes that have happened. He's a specimen, but he's an incredible young man. And I've known him since, you know, he was 10 years old, 9 years old. And his younger brother now is still at Vaughan. His family's there. And speaking to him, I think for me, you got to listen more than you talk. And then you got to know when it is that you got to give it a go. So listening to Julian, it was important to say, well, what is it that you're looking for? And it's what I asked Vitor. It's what I asked Gigi. What is it that you're looking for? Because I could tell you, we have great fans. I could tell you all the things, but it may mean nothing to you. What is it that you're looking for? And it makes it perfect for me, because the criteria that we have, if these players or these athletes are mentioning those, and those are the ones we go after. And some of the things are, for something different, I don't want to just win. I want to win what a true identity upon someone that just says, I believe in you, and you know, I want someone that pushes me. And you'd be absolutely shocked how little people say that, man. Not a lot of people want to be pushed. And I will say credit to Jen and Jordan and Jed. We push our guys. We really, really do. And I think a lot of them haven't been pushed. And the response at the beginning is a sense of unfamiliarity. But then after that, it's a sense of appreciation. I mean, not to jump away from Julian, I'll come back. I have to remind myself, we had a conversation with Jordan on Sunday. Dan Nimick, which I think in a few years will be in some high, high places, was found at a college that nobody else would have looked at. And he came, he was a good player, for sure. We have pushed him to get the best out of him. It is him that's doing it, but we have certainly done that. And I think with Julian, he wanted all those things. Obviously, you know, there's the obvious that we have Dan and we have Kale, and he's not afraid of competition. He wants to be part of something great. And the fact that I've known him so long and he's an incredible athlete that can play football made him a no-brainer for me. And he had a lot of options. So I'm ecstatic, really, really ecstatic to have Julian with us.
I just want you to say that you believe in me. I just want to hear. I need it right now.
As long as I don't have to make choose who I believe in more.
Done. We all know, Scary.
I believe in both.
It's all right. It's all right. It's okay.
I believe in both. You got it.
Start with like. I've never been in a professional environment, as you can tell. I've often wondered what a preseason looks like. I guess the idea most people have is that the first few weeks are heavy on fitness. You run the ball and tell people.
None of this is true. We show up. There's some soccer, tennis. There's some PS5. We have we order corn dogs and then we play tag. It's and water balloons sometimes. It's a lot nicer than people make it sound. It's delightful. It's delightful.
I don't believe you for a second. How does it actually work?
How does it work? It's fun for some and not fun for the others. To be political, if you like running, being screamed at, having long days, it's a lot of fun. You'd be surprised there's not a long list of people for that. So that's why I said it's a debatable between the both. But it's about laying the foundation of the house, right? And I think you got to get that part right, because otherwise the house will fall. So it's the toughest part. It's the longest job, and it's the most important job. So right now we've had to, and again, you know, there's the balance of what's too much and what's too little. Your mind always plays tricks on you. Did I do too much? Didn't I do enough? And I think you have to use your players and your senior leaders as a guideline that, hey, you know, I can't feel my pinky, let alone my legs. You're like, okay, then we've gone too much. So it's difficult when we're indoors with the catapult to get a true read on of our everything that we're doing with our workload. But we did a lot of preparation with our staff. Our guys, Jan, Jordan, and Jed again, were great preparing that. And I think right now, some of the stuff is, yeah, for sure preparation. But I really do believe, like the old days, when the coaches used to say, okay, you're going to run up the hill with rocks and be exhausted. And I don't think it ever did anything for fitness, but it really made you mentally tougher. And we're not running up the hills, I promise. We are doing things to make sure that we're mentally prepared for all things. So it's a combination of tactics, a combination of physical activity, and a lot of presentations. You know, there's days, last Thursday, we reported 8 a.m. as coaches. Our guys arrived at around 10:30, 11. They had a lift, they had a session, they had lunch, and they had a session. So they left their house at 7:30 a.m. They got home 7:30 p.m. So it's, you got to pay your dues right now, for sure, is the best way I could summarize that.
I think Derek's missing out on a trick here. Boot camp with Patrice. How many people would sign up for that? It'd be crazy.
No one's going to sign up, right? I've tried it, actually. Yeah, there won't be a lot of takers.
So Has anybody, is there anyone that stood out for you so far in training? Anyone that's kind of surprised you so far?
If someone has surprised me, then I would say we haven't done our job as a staff. I think everybody is where we want them to be. Sure, there's a few that are a little bit ahead of the schedule, and there's one or two that are behind the schedule. But at the same time, I'd rather have the bumps and bruises now so I could, you know, shake you and push you and be the bad guy. So when you guys are watching them, they look great. So I think everything is going on a different way. And you got to remember, not a lot of our guys are from here. So they're sleeping in different beds. They miss their mom and dad or girlfriend or wives. You got to take that into effect, right? So they may do great today and they do terrible tomorrow. And you don't know what it is. You have no idea. And with some players, you'll ask and they'll say, well, I miss my wife. And no problem. You understand that? With some, it's just like, I don't want to talk about it. So I think you got to take the good with the bad. We got to be there for them every day. We got to push them. And you know, I think at the end of the day, it's what happens in that first game against Pacific that's most important for us, that, you know, we're judging every day and holding them responsible. But, you know, it's up and down.
So just talk about, like, being out in BC. How happy are you with the preseason friendly schedule? Obviously, being out in BC prior to the opening two games, it just feels like a massive advantage for us.
Yeah, so I will say, for one, I definitely think it's going to help us prepare. Obviously, on the back end, we have to come back here, and we have a game, then we have to readjust. And I think, you know, credit to the entire organization that then we made that an advantage. You know, sure, we would have loved to have gone to Florida. Last year, Florida was incredible. Who doesn't want to be there? But at the same time, this is what was important and necessary, because one of our targets was improving our road wins and improving our road points and goals. So this is going to target that with the first two games. And I think, you know, the travel is exhausting, but this will prepare us. And whereas last year, Florida had grass fields, which really took away from injuries and load management. Our opponents were good, but this year our opponents are great. You know, we got Forge, we got TFC2, we got Whitecaps 2. We have some real good teams. So we'll really find out what we're made of, and better to find out now and repair it and fix it, like we said, than find out of the first game.
I was going to ask you about the goals for the season as a club and what you wanted to achieve. But then I saw an Ange Postecoglou quote the other day, and he's Tottenham filth, but he's also a wise man. And he was asked about finishing fourth, and he said, I don't see fourth as a prize. I don't want to finish fourth if we haven't grown and developed as a team. Fourth is not our goal. If we finish fifth but we've progressed, then I won't be disappointed. And I thought that's an interesting way to frame it, because the focus is on progression rather than finishing in a certain position in the league, which might be down to other clubs not being as strong that season. And for you personally, how do you view success? Do you view it as a position in the table, or do you lean more heavily onto the how has the group progressed side of things?
Yeah, so that's what I was going to get to when you said that he says progression. So it really becomes the question, what is progression in my eyes and in our eyes as a team, right? Is progression measured in points and goals, or is it measured in culture, which you can't touch? Or what is that for all of us, right? You know, I think, well, let me ask you, what do you think would be a good goal for, what is your goal for the team?
I always say, like, if we finish higher than last season, but I think the mistake in thinking like that is the focus again is on what position we finish in the league.
Sure.
Whereas, and I remember Anthony and I talking last season when we started with a lot of draws, the conversation was still very positive because I think we both recognize the amount of progress on the pitch. And I remember us saying, like, what are we here to complain about? We've got a coach who is inverting a fullback. Who else is doing that in this country right now? And we're seeing kind of a style of football we hadn't seen before. So despite the fact that we'd gone 8 games without winning, I still remember feeling very positive about it. So as much as I do put kind of a tangible level to it of finishing higher than we did the previous season, I want to watch good football at home every other Saturday and enjoy what I'm seeing and not relying on a 79th minute penalty to win 1-0 when we do win. So I think I've kind of come round to being more about process versus end result.
And you?
The same as Gary.
Yeah. To go back, listen, I mean, I have my doubts in those first 8 games when the first one was going to come. And I remember getting all these, every day there was a hate note left on my car till I figured out it was actually Jed doing it. So it wasn't any of you guys. Just mad that I'm working him so hard. So that's a different side. That's a different story. I don't know if that's one of the questions. Progression. We want to do things that's never been done in this league. And that's a bold statement because it's vague and it's a big statement. This offseason is unlike anything I've seen as a fan and now as a coach in this league. Everybody's gone all out, and so have we. But what is it that we want to do with our signings? I think we want to say we're proud of our core. We're going to remain consistent, but just grow. And our growth is just really about us. So one of the first things I said to our guys in preseason was, this season is about us. We've spoken when we're playing Forge and Calgary. They got this guy, they got that guy, but we also have this. And it was important because scouting. But now Lorenzo, Dan, and most of our guys know what we're about. So it's really now about us. So for me, progression is seeing fear in our opponents, seeing wins on the road with people being upset, coming home and celebrating wins with you guys, and doing it in style. And if I could be a little selfish, I certainly want to see our guys and our players improve and being able to go on and play at another level. I love to be sitting next year saying, wow, isn't it amazing to see X, Y, Z play for whatever they are? And we would hate to lose core players, but I think for me, it's a dream. And it's something that I did at Vaughn with Kamal and Alistair and Ryan. We want to be able to produce almost a factory, which is just, here comes a great player, he moves on, here comes the next one, and we just keep going. So I think we want to progress in the table, but we want to be able to press more. We want to be able to keep the ball more, and we want to be able to really tell our story and be the protagonist and not be adjusting to our opponents and be afraid of anything.
Thank you. Listener questions?
We've got some listener questions. I did have one question for you. Obviously, Sunday was St. Patrick's Day, and I was dying of debt yesterday. So what's your best hangover cure?
I think you have to ask that question from Jordan. Jordan, you want to give us a hand? I'm stop drinking. There you go.
Sunday.
There you go. Yes, for sure. There you go. There's one.
So this is a question.
What's yours?
The exact same. Dog. Best thing that's ever happened. First listener question. Who's the best assistant coach in the league and why? This is from a Jay Feliciano.
Yeah. I would definitely say for sure it's the assistant at Valor. No, I'm just
Daryl Fordyce is the
man. I'm just kidding. Listen, we talk about, and to be honest, I didn't want to do this in front of everyone, but I reached out to both of you guys earlier, and I said, we don't want to talk about Julian. I want to talk about Giorgio, but you guys still did it, and I'm okay with it. We want to talk about our staff, because as much as we've been able to keep our core of players, but to keep the core and our entire staff coming back, has been incredible, right? So Jordan has continued to do great work. Jed's been amazing. Jan's been amazing. I mean, Jan's a legend. I go to the anywhere. You know, it's difficult to maybe get a table or get a drink. If I'm with Jan, like, you're getting top VIP service. So he's not even here, man. Why are we clapping for him? What is happening here? Yeah, he's not even here and he gets a clap. So, yeah. So our staff is second to none. Of course, excluding me, because I make them work 16 hours and I don't let them go. And that's why I get the hate notes from Jed. But our staff and the sacrifices they made, it's incredible.
This one's from Kyle Findlay.
It's kind of similar to what I asked a moment ago. What would you consider a successful season for us this year? Better on the road, finishing top three, scoring more away goals unless they've ditched that ridiculous rule?
Yeah, well, no, I think, it makes perfect sense to have away goals difference ahead of head-to-head. I think you guys need to put Derek on the hot seat to ask him that question. And just in case you guys aren't sure where he is, he's right there. So he needs to speak about that. But, we have targeted areas that we want to improve. So not a lot of... If you go over our stats, we gave up the same goals away as we did at home. Not a lot of people know that. So we were defensively very sound. You could even question that, you know, if... the gentlemen in the yellow shirts were a little bit more kind to us. It could have been less, but I'm not saying that. Someone else could have said that. So I think to get more goals on the road, to start the season brighter, are targeted goals. But at the end of the day, the progress is to grow. It's definitely to grow.
Perfect. Someone else wanted to know a bit about the Patrice pitch. David Murren asked about how much last year's signings also echoed the sentiment about how much you could sell a vision to them. But he wanted to know how many potential recruits have turned you down, because it can't be many. And we're talking about football players right now, just to clarify.
Oh, thank God.
Shitload.
I wasn't sure. Is this recorded? Will my wife hear this? No, she's amazing. So I will say, I've given all the credit to Jordan, Jed, and Jan, so I have to say one positive thing. My batting percentage is 95%. So I would say we don't get a lot of guys that we go for, but we also don't go for everybody. We go for the people that are going to fit us. And I think for me to have a connection with the player, whether they used to play for me, and I was at Vaughan for a long time, and Vaughan has produced some remarkable players, that's an avenue that we've looked at. But at the same time, you know, I think it's really, like we said earlier, you start the conversation, and I have not picked up anyone, and I've said this to them on the first call, that, hey, if you're in a rush to make a decision, you could go, because we need to talk 3 or 4 times. So it is kind of different when they're here, because when they talk to the BFC and CFC, they're like, hey, you're our guy, let's sign. And I'm saying, no, I'm not sure if you're our guy. I want to get to know you. What are you looking for? Here's what I can offer you. And then I come back on the second one. There's a bit of a video about our style of play that now they start to, like, you could see it when you're on the camera with them on the Zoom. You start to get some excitement. There's some movement. There's like some scratching of body parts, and, you know, there's some eye contact, so it's great. And then the third one, now you're like, okay, I know what you're looking for. You saw what we have. Here is what I can help you with. So I think to go in selfishly is the furthest thing I've tried, and I pray this has not been the case. I think I don't want to bring a player in that it's all about, let's just use him to win. Every conversation, everything for us been to bring a player in, help him prepare to go to the next level. I don't know how many of us know, but we ended up being tied for the youngest team in the league last year, which is crazy considering we had 18 new players, you know, and the fantastic travel we had with, you know, Air Canada only, not WestJet. But I think when you go through those things, it's important. It's important.
For sure, yeah. We had a question from Kevin Anderson. He's a Forge fan who I believe you met in Hamilton recently during their CONCACAF game. And he said, besides meeting him, when he attended the Forge CONCACAF game, what was your biggest takeaway from that incredible atmosphere and the tournament in general?
Well, it's really hard to find anything else positive other than that. But no. I was lucky enough to see the finals as well. We were there for the and the league did an incredible job for the awards and bringing everybody in. It was fantastic. So I got to kind of see two games in that facility as a fan and not as a coach in a 3 month, 4 month radius. You see it and you see the great fans they have, and I don't think it compares to anything we have here, not even close. But the feeling I have is that I want to bring that here for you guys. And again, I don't want to be selfish and say, I want to be a part of that so I can have it. Sure, Jordan, Jen, and myself want that. Our players want that. But I want the experience for our fans, because to see and imagine Cruz Azul or Monterrey or any of these teams coming here, I couldn't imagine what's going to happen in the city. You know, so I think we will definitely need to go back to that question with, what was it, the cure for the hangover.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't need that. So my takeaway was, what a feeling. I would love to take this in and bring it for you guys, bottle it in and bring it here to the city.
Amazing.
I just had a question from Mr. Chris Searle. I'm sure everybody knows. Ryan Telfer spoke about you reaching out to him during this off season to come to Halifax. What is it about Ryan that made him one of the first people you called this off season to join the club?
Yeah, Mr. Bad Guy himself. Yeah, yeah.
Good food. Get out of here.
It was Jordan again. It's in. It's just automatic, Jordan. Someone told me that every story has a villain, and he's definitely a part of ours. We have had some villains before. I'm sure you guys may recognize it. But those villains are always the ones that you love when they're on your side. I know Ryan for quite some time. He used to be a Vaughan. I was at York. He was at York University. And I think Ryan is cultured. Ryan is extremely athletic. He has a big, big personality. Like, you don't need to tell Ryan, tell me what you think. And I mean that in a good way. Because we have a lot of quiet guys in our change room. And I'm certainly borderline a bigger personality. So to have a guy in the change room that can get the juices flowing is great. Ryan has played, I want to say maybe 30 games in the MLS. Ryan has played, he scored the first goal in the CPL. He has played right wing, left wing, up front, left back. He's played in World Cup qualifying games. He's a regular for Trinidad. And he has a connection to that guy. What's his name?
Andre Rampersad.
Yeah, Andre Rampersad. So
who's that?
Yeah, exactly. So that really helped. So for me, it was a home run. But Ryan had a lot of admirers. And, you know, again, I had to give him the pitch. So luckily it worked out and we got him. And, you know, I think he may be a bad guy to the one person, but I promise you, the moment that he scores his first goal on the grounds, you're going to feel that he'll be one of our first heroes. He'll change your mind, I promise.
Who's that Valor guy in season one who wrecked the table on his way off? I think he's probably a bigger villain, to be fair, to be honest.
What happened? You ripped a table?
He was sent off, and as he was walking off, there was a table next to the entrance to the changing rooms, and he kicked it, and the table collapsed, and like the water bottle flew up and hit someone in the face.
That was a Julian Dunn, was it? No. Did he play for Val?
No.
Oh, was, you're good.
No. What was his name?
Should have reviewed that, okay.
No.
All right. As long as it's not Julian or Ryan, then we're good. Okay. Yeah. All right.
So this is from Robbie Craig. Patrice, how much say do you have in the transfer concepts? Is it 50-50 between yourself and Matt?
I hate to put things in percentages, but I would say I am particular in what we're looking for. Matt does a tremendous job bringing players forward. For sure, I've driven Matt crazy. Is Matt here? Where is he? There he is. Look, he doesn't even come. Yeah. He's the guy that booed me too, I think. So Matt does a tremendous job with his resources, bringing guys forward. And I'm like, no, he's too tall. He's too short. No, we can't have any more guys with no hair because we got me and Jen. We met our quota. So I would never put it on percentages. And I certainly don't think this is just Matt and I. We have a lot of great people behind us, like Jordan, Chad, and Jen. So we work as a committee. But I think there's, again, going back on those things, having players that I've worked with before really brings like almost a year of experience. So whereas our new Julian, he's already, although it's his first season, I feel like he's going into second season because I knew him. So I think having players that I knew and familiarity and positioning and their mentality is all more important than their ability as a player.
Awesome. This one's from Kyle Spinitez, Pelota. Pelota, did I mean Maple? Am I saying that wrong? My Spanish is terrible. Has anyone from the Atlantic Selects caught your attention in the two friendly gases? And how is the Black Soccer Notebook going? Have you filled it already?
Yeah, I write a lot. There's the book that I threw against the bench in the Forge game, which some of you may have seen on TV, and it hit Jordan, and Jordan was threatening to sue me. But
workers' comp.
Yeah, workers' comp. I gave him from that day was a Saturday. He got from 10 to midnight off. So as a cop, and you don't ask him where he went. But I write a lot. I write a lot. For Christmas, my wife got me 4 books. Hot sauce and beers. So that's kind of all the interest I've left. I wish there was more. Feels empty. But the book's filming. Sorry, what was the first part? I got lost in the black book. For Selects. Yeah, there's so many, you know, when you go into that game, you're not really sure what you're getting because we all know it was supposed to be a different opponent. We were able to do a U-turn quickly and put a top opponent against us. There's just so many good players everywhere. You know, sadly, one of my advices to my son, who's a very good player, 10 years old, is maybe think about school because soccer is just one of the toughest professions there is. It's just really difficult. There's so many good players. And, you know, we're one of the teams as an organization that's given a lot of chances to first-time pros. So, you know, I feel like we're like Mother Teresa because even now so many other people are coming to us, hey, I need a chance. What do you think? But there's only so many spots. This league needs more teams. Derek's going to be here afterwards for you guys to talk to him. There you go. Because there are good players, Carlos. You're absolutely right. So there's a lot of players that caught my eye, but I think it's what you see in front of you. For me, I always look at a player that how would he do in our environment? So I say, what I see now is not what I'm going to get in 8 months because maybe it'll be better or maybe it'll be worse. You know, it depends on their individual behavior and mentality. But there are players there that could perform and go up, but, you know, there's only so many spots that could go around.
I just had a quick follow-up. Were you surprised by the intensity of that game? There was a lot of meaty challenges that went in. Those two games, like, they really brought their A game to play against us. So was that something that you would ask for?
Camilo had tissue up his nose by the end as well.
No, generally it's uncommon for a coach to ask the opposition coach to produce, what is it he said? Meaty? Meaty challenges.
Beefy challenges.
Yeah, no, that would be uncommon. No, but I mean, listen, our guys are going after it. They were going after it. I am never the guy to ever say, take it easy. Like, I think that that's like a sin, but maybe at some points we should have taken it easy. We had a lot of guys walking and wobbling yesterday, but we need that. And again, what I loved about it is that after every tackle and after everything, there was a handshake, and it wasn't as if they were being disrespectful to say, I'm an AUS player, I'm going to kill you, I want your position. They're just trying to do their best. And I would do just the same, and I think all of us would. Give us 2-3 beers, we would probably even do more. That's yada, right?
I'm going to 2 foot you on the way up.
Yeah. I just wish I didn't get that hate note after the game on my car, which I'm still convinced is Jed.
I think they told you it was Jed, so you didn't feel so bad. I think it was someone in this room
was Gary.
Actually did it. Yeah, it was. Oh, it was me. Yeah.
I told Gary he was wrong before, and he held it too hard. Every time he calls and he's like, hey, Patrice, it's Gary, the guy that you said that was wrong. Maybe we don't need the full intro every time. We could just say it's Gary.
Gary's like, you're inverting the fullback the fucking way.
When you save my number in your phone, I'll stop doing that. So we had a question from Luke Culligan, and Luke wanted to know, how many matches does Patrice watch in a week, in season and out? And he also wanted this question to extend to Jordan too. So how much football do you pair of absolute weirdos watch?
This weekend was a dark weekend. Obviously St. Paddy's Day. Our guys are going out. I'm staying in. I had a bottle of bourbon, and I just turned on the TV. I think I ended up watching like 18 games. I talked to Jordan. I think he even did more. So it's, I watched a lot. I don't normally watch that much, but...
That's not true.
No. Not emptying a weekend, for sure. Definitely not. I wish I could. But normally, I definitely say, you know, I do whatever I can to watch the teams that really inspire me and excite me. But I'm finding myself watching, you know, morning English, afternoon French, afternoon MLS. And, you know, it was Saturday, it was 2 a.m. I think I was watching the Indonesian second league. It's a dark place. Yeah. I wish you didn't ask this question.
Jakarta FC, I'm like,
Maybe we can ask Jordan. Jordan, how many games did you watch this weekend?
I watched 4 on Sunday.
It's less than 18, so he's at a good place. He's having a good place.
So next preseason, we can expect an Indonesian signing then?
We're going to Indonesia for preseason. Bali is a really nice place, so we're going there. Really nice.
We had a question from Alex Donahoe, who said, although we only lost a couple of away games last season, which was great, we only won a couple too. I was wondering about how different away games are for you personally, going from like the slightly smaller League One Ontario geographically to one of the biggest leagues in the world. So how I think that's been a problem we've had since the first season, and I don't know if there's a solution. Like, how do you solve that?
It's like looking at, this is not a pitch, to say it's, our beer is half empty or half full. We lost very little games on the road, but we also tied 8. So that's not easy, but we have an advantage. And, you know, I think we tied for first for home games for points. It was us and Calgary. So obviously we took advantage of the distance, but on the road, it wasn't easy. And just remember that we had a lot of players that were first-time pros. So there are, I will never be able to say that's just what it is. It's just not who I am. So we're going to improve it. So we looked at having a deeper squad, more squad rotation, get to the games earlier, like going to Pacific and Vancouver 2 weeks earlier. And for us, our players now, what to expect. So we toyed around with different ideas. When we were on the road, to adjust to the timeline of where we were going. Then we did a split. So we're at Vancouver. Okay, split the time because it's 4-hour time difference. And then the one that was starting to see its charm was the one that, okay, no matter where we go, we stick to Halifax timeline. So if we're at Vancouver, we're going to bed 8 p.m. because it's midnight here. So when we get back, we don't get a double whammy, right? So I think we all needed to play around with it. It is drastically different than League One, because League One, you're taking a bus to Windsor, but and you know, it's different. But Pacific, and I don't know, we found ourselves going to the Calgary airport, that as Kale did in his interview, but when you go to, you know, different places, you have all these different potential problems, delayed flights, the time between the flights get changed. You just can't let it throw you off. So I think mental strength, our preparation, and a deeper squad will hopefully be the remedy for what we're looking for.
I think what you're saying is Derek needs to buy a private jet.
Me or the team?
The team.
Well, my wife asked for a private jet for next year for Christmas. So. Yeah. No. Listen, we have a lot of resources, and the organization has done a tremendous job. I just think that we know now what to expect, right? We're ready to say, oh, no problem. You know, and it happens to everybody at every level. So.
So before we get Derek up to answer a few questions, what's your thoughts on the new CPL rules regarding U Sports contracts no longer counting towards primary roster?
Yeah, I shouldn't talk about this. I'll say this. I think the league is continuing to take steps in the right direction. There are so many good players everywhere, like we talked about, including U Sports. So this is a good way of promoting and giving us an incentive to say, hey, take a look at young players and university players more. We look at U Sports players like, you know, I would have rather had a guy from the Portuguese fourth division come here because he's got 20 pro games. But I could tell you, you know, Gabby Bitar, who had a really good season for Vancouver, he was a U Sports player that's progressed through. And the one that I have to draw our attention to, that I think is the story of this entire league, really, is Kareem Sal. Kareem has gone year by year.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at that, and he's progressed through and earned his time to be where he is. And, you know, as an organization, we allowed the time for Kareem, and Kareem's like a very elite student, to complete a school and be a footballer. And that doesn't happen often because, you know, generally it would be the amount of hours you spend on the field. You just can't attend the books. So I think it's a really good incentive to tell all of us CPL coaches, hey, sure, look in Europe, look in South America, but don't forget the guys that are here.
What an amazing young man too. Yeah, so everybody, the main man himself.
Thanks, everybody.
So we're continuing on now with the captain of our Halifax Wanderers ship, Derek Martin. Ladies and gentlemen. Derek, I want to ask probably the most controversial question first.
Great.
And yeah, just get you in trouble straight away. There were links today with Amir Didic and Manny Aparicio signing with Atletico Ottawa, and I think we've all been keeping an eye on them this preseason with the amount of cap space they're potentially putting towards it, or potentially there's a lot of coaching jobs in that part of the country. Who knows if there are? And I just wanted your perspective as another owner of a CPL club, how you view them and their spending.
Very subtle. So I will say my only text I sent today was to these two to say, do not ask Patrice that question, because I would only know where he would go. But listen, I think at the end of the day, you know, I'm in a fortunate position where I get some transparency that you guys don't get, and I get to see kind of what the contracts are for other teams. And at the end of the day, this is math. Okay? So I used this example with somebody earlier today. You know, let's just, for easy math, say we're trying to get to, you know, $1.2 million. There's a lot of different ways you can get there, right? So if we're assuming 20 players at $60,000 a year, that's $1.2 million. If you pay $10,000, $80,000, you pay $10,000, $40,000, you still get to $1.2 million. So it really comes down to making a strategic decision about how you want to build your squad. And you know, you heard Patrice earlier talk about how we have made a very strategic decision to have depth to help us deal with the challenge of playing on the road. And I'm glad he said it because, you know, we love the fact that we win a lot at home recently. But, you know, there's a good and a bad to having the travel that we have. The good is it's really tough for a lot of the other teams to come play us. The bad is that we have to go and play them. So we have made a decision, and, you know, this is why you play the games, to see who is right in how they decided to build out the team. And I know everyone loves a good conspiracy, and I know everyone loves to, you know, assume that people are breaking rules and doing all of these nefarious things. But at the end of the day, you know, we have to believe in the processes we have in place. We trust in our commissioner, our football department, to kind of validate what we do. We certainly do everything we can to be above board and make sure we're following the rules. And we've chosen to build a squad 1 through 23 that we think is going to be standing by the end of the season and making it through 28 games. You know, to speak specifically about what Ottawa is doing, they're making a different choice. You know, they're building a team that's got 10 or 11 really, really strong players. That may work. Those 11 players may make it all the way through 28 games, and they will be a formidable squad. I have no doubt. There's a lot of talent there.
And we'll beat them anyway.
And we'll beat them anyway. You know, Patrice's line about there has to be villains, that came from me today when I said it to him, that Ottawa certainly set themselves up to be the villains this year. But, you know, I did a little look at the rosters, and I got to tell you, I wouldn't trade our roster for theirs, right? There's pluses and minuses on both sides. So we'll see how it works out, and I give them credit. They're taking a swing. They're going for it. If they avoid injuries, they're going to be really, really good. If they get a few of those guys hurt, I think they're in for a real challenging season. But they're taking their shot. And we've decided to build with younger, I think many times equally talented players. There's also a tendency in our league, I think in all leagues probably around the world, that you think the guys that you know maybe are better than the guys you don't know. And I think that's been proven out over time, that sometimes the best, nobody knew who Joao Morelli was before he came here, right? And he ended up being the best player in the league. So I think sometimes there's a lot to be found in bringing in new people, and a lot of it then comes down to how they play together, the style that the coach is playing. It'll be an interesting experiment to see how Ottawa works out, and I have no doubt they'll be good, but I also have no doubt that we're gonna be good. So we'll see what happens. That's not as resounding of an applause as I was hoping for. I don't know if everybody's buying what I'm selling there, but I'm going. Yeah, yeah.
I think the way I see it is, a club like Atletico Ottawa, they sign names and we make names. And as a club philosophy, I'd rather be on that side of things. Robbie Craig had a question for you, Derek. He said, have you noticed the transfer model and recruitment change from the first 4 years? And I'm quite interested in this question as well, because do you find players are more open to joining us than they were in 2019 because of what we're building with Patrice and Jordan and Jed and yourself and Matt as well, of course, and also just where potential signings now, see what the club is, see the amount of people that come every week. Yeah. It's kind of a rare opportunity within this country to play in front of that many people week in, week out. And have you noticed a difference in attitude from potential signings?
Yeah, I think definitely. When we go back to when we started, we were, the team that was out there. And, we didn't have a ton of history. We didn't have a ton of a soccer culture. You know, most of the good players still in our league are coming from Ontario and BC. So I think for them, obviously, they're going to gravitate towards staying close to home and playing for Forge or, playing for York or Pacific. And it was hard to get players to think about coming out east. And I think sometimes we all forget what stage of life a lot of these guys are at, right? They're 19, 20, 21, 22. We're asking them to leave everything they've ever known and move out to a place that, sure, we look great on a postcard and we've got some beauty, but they don't know that. They live and breathe soccer every single day. And if they don't know anyone out here and they have no idea of us because we've not done anything of significance in the soccer world, it's a big step. And I think we struggled with that the first few years, to be honest. It was really difficult. Then, in the last couple of years, I think there's two things that have happened. One, we've now built a reputation because of the fans, because of you guys, as a place that people desperately want to play. You don't get this atmosphere anywhere else. Everyone says it. It's consistent. It's over and over and over again. This is a unique place to play in Canada. So we can attract players that way. And you heard Patrice pat himself on the back and tell you about his 95% closing rate. And he's a force, right? He's a force. And I've seen it. I've watched it. You guys all see it in terms of the pipeline of players that are starting to come. And it's partly because of his personality, partly because of the style of soccer that he plays, which is incredibly attractive both to you guys as fans and to players to want to play. And the Vaughn connection is a really significant piece of the puzzle. He has been able to be involved with a number of incredibly talented players over the last 15 years. And that is huge. That's a big benefit. So, all of those things went into why he was such a great choice for us to hire. And, it's played out now and we're starting to see it where we're bringing in the people that we want to bring in. And I think that's important. I don't want to be, this is being recorded or not being? Okay.
Being very recorded.
Yeah. Listen, Patrice said it earlier. This isn't just about collecting toys. Right? This is about building a team. So you can try to just add the most talented players you can find, or you can try to find the best group of young men that you think are going to offer all of the different aspects that you need to have to create a really competitive squad. We've chosen the latter. I have all the respect in the world. I'm not throwing down a gauntlet to say that we're going to win the league and we're the best. I think it's going to be an interesting challenge to see, how we do using that philosophy versus a philosophy of just trying to sign the 12 best players you can possibly find and filling it in with a bunch of, U Sport or lower end players to fill in the rest. And that's going to be a really interesting scenario to watch unfold and to see how that works out. And it's not going to be decided in week 3. It's going to be decided in week 28. And we'll find out. And that's why we play the games, right? That's why we do this.
So I thought we would open up to the floor if anybody has any questions for Derek. But before we do, I did actually have one question myself. So today there was an article on Sportsnet again about how Canadian soccer is almost bankrupt, there's trouble with funds, and talking about potentially asking junior people to pay more money for registrations and stuff like that, and a lot of this seems to be being placed at the door of CSB. So obviously the Wanderers are part of that group. Do you think that's unfair, and why is it the big media outlets in Canada seem to want the CPL to fail.
Where's the St. Patrick's Day hangover questions?
And also, what's your hangover cure?
No, listen, it's a fair question. I think, obviously, I can't answer everything. I think what you're referring to is the new General Secretary's interview about his comments around the fact that actually Canada Soccer is not bankrupt, that they're fine for this year. Obviously, there's challenges that they're trying to work through. Those things are complicated, and it's not ever as simple as some groups will try to portray it for their own benefit. But it's not easy, and I think at the end of the day, when CSB came forward to Canada Soccer with an offer, it was a really good offer. And in business, it's really difficult to go back in time and try to take the situation of today and apply it to the situation of 7 years ago and equate it equally. So, you know, we're very interested in the success of soccer in Canada. I think what people tend to forget is CSB is only successful if Canada Soccer is successful. So CSB has kind of bet and invested over $100 million collectively when you look at the eight teams across the CPL over the last 6 years and getting through COVID and everything else. Over $100 million has been invested that only can ever be realized if the game of soccer in Canada continues to grow, right? So we are as motivated as anybody to ensure that the game grows. How we do that requires a lot of discussion. And I think over history, it would be, I think anyone would be hard pressed to say the way it had been being done was the right way. So that means you need to change it up and you need to go at it differently. And I think all we're trying to say is there needs to be a different approach to how we grow the game. There needs to be a different approach to how you deal with the men's game, the women's game, the national teams, corporate sponsorship, broadcast rights. You know, the reality is, I think everybody in this room knows, but the reality is Canada was paying to have their games on TV forever. You know, that seems to get lost all the time in all of this. Like that's not an insignificant amount of money they've invested. Their corporate sponsorships were way less than what we've been able to bring in through CSB. So, you know, it's inconvenient for some people to talk about that, but that's the truth. And it also doesn't negate the fact that there needs to be a new agreement for sure, and there needs to be a way that can be equitable and that everybody can grow, but we've got to get there. And those aren't things you can negotiate through media. Those aren't the things you can negotiate on social media. But I am confident we're going to get there. We've done too much. We've already accomplished so much. Halifax didn't even exist on the soccer map 7 years ago, and here we are, right? As I think the beacon for what soccer in Canada can be, and we'll get there. You know, we'll get there.
So, in the interest of fairness, what is your St. Patrick's Day hangover cure?
Well, I had one Guinness yesterday because I spent the week in Dominican with my son for his class trip, so I'd had enough. But I would have to agree that having a nice Caesar the morning after is probably the best way to deal with it. Either that or just accept it's going to be miserable and get through it.
Yeah. So if anybody wants to come up and ask questions, just say your name, ask a question. For love of God, the foursome better be a softball question. Just say
no, it's all good. It's all good. It's all good. Bring it.
Carlos, go for it.
Hi. I have a question. I saw on social media Project 8 posted about like looking for a chairman for the Atlantic Women League coming. I was wondering if there's any hint or any, it's going to be part of the Halifax Wanderers? Are the Halifax Wanderers going to be part of that? Because, just curious.
Yeah, fair question. We've certainly spoken to the group that's interested. I think there's a lot of work still to be done. In both Project 8 nationally and locally. I think we all agree women's soccer deserves a chance to be successful. there's a lot of work that went in behind the scenes with CPL to ensure the conditions were there for there to be success. I think a lot of that work has to still happen on the women's side. And sometimes there's benefit in pushing and being aggressive, but there's also a need sometimes to make sure you've got your house in order. And I think I'm just trying to say that as nicely as I can, that you know, there still needs to be some things that have to happen for me personally to feel confident that the conditions are there for there to be success. We've said many times we are ready and willing to invest in women's soccer. Matt's been working hard to, you know, find some friendlies. We've already hosted a camp. We've had an identification camp to try to find the best female players in the region. We would love to host some games at the Wanderers grounds to showcase women's soccer and to have some, you know, the great females in the region playing there. We're close, but we're still not there. So we'll have to see. I hope we can make it all work. I think it would be a shame if there was a women's team here that wasn't the Wanderers. And I hope we can find a way to make that all work and make it work in a way that is set up for long-term success.
Great question, Carlos. Mr. Mike Campbell.
Mike.
Are you going to ask in English or in Gaelic?
Right up here.
Mr. Martin, could you tell us more about washrooms, etc.?
Still the same. I wish I had a better answer. Next year.
I think that's going to be our nickname going forward, going to be the washrooms. Does anybody else have a question for Derek? Come forward.
Been a fan since day one. I mean, the inaugural game completely changed my life, I'm going to be honest. But having completely exhausted the local market, I want to say, every year we do the U Sports Draft. There's got to be one Halifax guy. When do we branch on from that? You've obviously done the Halifax, try to get the local fans on board. We're all here. When do we start branching on from that? I mean, you talked about Ottawa bringing in a lot of big talent, big names. Not Halifax or Ottawa people, sorry. When do we start to, I don't know, move on from Halifax-based sports and, like, the Wanderers are Halifax guys? Because football is an international game. We are trying to get on the international stage with CONCACAF and stuff. When do we...
Do you mean with players? Like,
yeah,
like
players, absolutely. Players? Yeah. Players, yeah.
Well, I wish we had more Halifax players, but we really don't.
No, but we always draft and, like, try to go kind of Halifax-based, I feel.
Right. Well, I don't think we'd go Halifax-based. Like, this year we drafted Max, who is Halifax-based. But, you know, what we've done is we've said we want to support AUS, and we want to support the growth of AUS soccer within the U Sport framework. So we're going to try to support drafting AUS kids to come into the Wanderers world. And I think what we've seen is that the league has grown to a point where it's much more difficult for those U Sport players to really break in and become contributing players on the squad. So
is Forge strictly OUA players?
No, I don't think so. They are OUA Quebec, really. But again, that's because they've got a bunch of great players in that region. And I think the reality is a lot of those U Sport guys aren't going to be the players on the squads that make a difference. You know, they're development players. They're guys you want to invest in. There's guys you want to try to help. We haven't had a ton of success with U Sport players even before we kind of switched over to going AUS specific. So it's more about trying to say, hey, how can we help grow the ecosystem of the sport? Can we help recruit more guys to come to AUS sport because they know there's a bit of a pathway to get over to the Wanderers?
Do you think going outside of that, though, and aside from developing players, just bringing a championship to Halifax where we already have a huge network of fans, and bringing the international game where we have a diverse culture in Halifax would not further build the Halifax brand and the Wanderers fan base in turn, where we could say, hey, we have, you know, Mexican teams or South American teams coming to play, and you could be a fan of this. And
like from a friendly standpoint?
No. Like once we, you know, once we do win the league and, you know, win the playoffs and stuff, and
yeah,
or when we do, going outside of Halifax players. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think I don't mean to be pushing back, but I just think the U Sport, the U Sport.
Be on the mic this long. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. Your jacket's great, so I love that. It's awesome. U Sport is just its own unique piece of the puzzle. In this. So the only time we've ever said that we're going to focus on AUS only is in the U Sport draft, of which we get two draft picks a year, and we may or may not choose to keep those players on the squad. The way U Sports works, contracts work, we can actually go sign any U Sports player that was in the draft to a contract. They don't have to be the guys that we drafted. So, you know, we make a commitment to invite those guys to our training camp. We want to give them the best opportunity, the best chance to make the squad. But if they're not up to making it, then we're not going to take them just to take them. They're not going to take up a roster spot on our squad just because they're from AUS or from the region. So I don't see the connection, to be honest, like between us being able to grow the game and promote it and get to the point where we're winning championships based on how we do in U Sports. It's a tool. It's one thing that we can use, just like a bunch of other things. But I commend Matt, you know, on making that statement that we want to support AUS soccer and we want to help grow the game. I think, you know, one of the challenges we really face out here is there isn't, I hate to say it out loud, but it's true. There just is not the level of talent in the Maritimes that there is in Ontario, BC, even Alberta. So we're kind of behind the eight ball a little bit in that we do have to bring everybody in to kind of make up our squad. And we don't have the advantage of, you know, 10 guys living within, you know, 15 minutes of the Wanderers grounds that can live at home. They can get paid a salary that doesn't include housing. Like, these are all factors that, you know, end up contributing to why a Forge or an Ottawa or a York can consistently be pretty good, because they don't have to pay that, right? They can pay a kid $40,000 in cash instead of $30,000 in cash and $10,000 in housing, which to that person doesn't really matter because they could live at home and not have to worry about that. So I think it's something we've identified that we have to try to improve, and this is one way that we're hoping that it might improve it by committing to AUS athletes in the draft.
Yeah.
Derek Simon.
I'm actually going to try to build on the last two questions. So it's a bit of a two-parter, but obviously the club's made a commitment to supporting an eventual League One Atlantic, which addresses part of the question the previous guy was asking. And the has also put forward a fairly solid proposal for a permanent stadium. So just wondering how discussions on those two things are progressing.
Yeah, the permanent stadium continues to be a great ongoing conversation with, I'd say, both levels of government. We really haven't had a lot of conversations with the federal government. That's not something they really get involved in, but the province and the city have both been extremely open to kind of what we've been talking about. I feel like a broken record. I feel like I keep saying the same thing, and we're not really making a ton of progress in being official. But I do believe we're really close to making this happen. We have accomplished the goal I set out to accomplish, which was proving this was the right location. So I no longer ever hear the argument of there should be a stadium in Dartmouth Crossing. There should be a stadium out somewhere else. Like, everyone now agrees that the Wanderers grounds is the right spot. Now it's more of a political question of how do we get the money? Where does the money come from? You know, we're a growing city. We're dealing with lots of interesting new problems that come from growing. Obviously the homelessness issue was a huge issue for us, is a huge issue for us. Not that it's solved, but it's been an issue for us for the last 6 months. We're trying to figure out how to deal with that as a city and as a province. We're starting to kind of come out, I think, on the other side, at least with a solution, whether you agree with it or not. They've at least put a plan in place for how to deal with it. And that now opens the door for us to move on to some of the other things that we're trying to work through and figure out which a stadium would be one of them. So, you know, our plan has stayed the same from when we made the presentation back in September. We're still pushing for a 2025 stadium. I've not been told by anyone that we can't do that. No, it hasn't been approved yet either. So we're kind of in that interesting space of trying to get to the final decision. Budget time in Halifax is at the end of April for anyone that's interested in paying attention to timelines. So by the end of April, we're really probably going to know for sure if it's this year, 2025, or it's 2026. But you guys and us have done the work to prove to City Council that this is something that, you know, the city needs and wants. And we will be coming out to ask for some more help soon in terms of, you know, and a lot of people have done it and I thank you for it, but a lot of people have reached out to their local councillor and sent a letter or an email. And that stuff all really matters. You know, municipal politics is all about individual connections. And, you know, if a councillor's out at a coffee shop on a Saturday morning and someone comes up to them and brings up the stadium, that doesn't leave their mind. That's something that resonates. And the more of that stuff we can do, the better. League One, an interesting one. We are like so committed to it. We're having some challenges getting other people committed to it, if I'm being frank. It's a lot to take on. Our geography doesn't help. You know, Patrice mentioned League One. You know, your longest drive is kind of Toronto to Windsor. Here we're talking about driving to, you know, Charlottetown and Fredericton, which is a little bit of a different hike. We are going to do something this summer, whether that looks like a full League One or it's another series of exhibitions. We're working through, we're working hard at it. Matt's working really hard at it. I give him the credit. He's spending most of the time on it. We are looking at a men's and a women's division in that. And we really hope in the next, you know, 2 to 4 weeks that we can announce a little bit more on it. But admittedly, it's not easy work. Trying to find, you know, six groups that are willing to put the money up and invest in doing what we're willing to invest in, but we can't do it ourselves. We can't play games against ourselves, so we've got to find opponents. Yeah.
Thanks. Anybody else?
So I'm a Nova Scotian, but I've been a season ticket holder since day one, and I've lived in St. John's, Newfoundland the entire time.
Wow. So thank you. That's awesome.
I guess my question is like the Wanderers are the Atlantic Canadian team. They're the Halifax team, yes, but you know, for those of us who aren't in the market every day, if you want to support Canadian soccer, you want to follow CPL, the Wanderers are the team. And I think part of the success, or at least from what I can sense, part of the success is because Halifax is a smaller market. There's, you know, less options for this sort of entertainment. Can it be replicated? Can it be replicated in a Moncton or in a St. John's? Are those markets too small for CPL to succeed? Can this be done again? Because I look at St. John's, you know, because I'm there, and I see the passion around like the AHL hockey teams and stuff like that. Like, I feel like CPL could do it, but you've done it and you know what the recipe is. Can it be replicated?
Yeah, I think it can.
The fans are great, right? Do you have the demographic? Is 100,000 people too small?
It's a fair question. And I've said that I think sometimes people think it can work and it can. So I think New Brunswick's a real challenge. You know, I've said, I don't know if I've ever said it publicly and on a recorded podcast, so I'll probably get in trouble. But if you have a city of 100,000 people, it's really difficult, right? This is at some level the numbers game. And you're right. Halifax works really well because we're growing. We're a capital city of a region. We have a large corporate base, which allows us to sell out all of our corporate suites and sell all of our premium tables, which helps brings up the general revenue that comes in, which allows us to then not have to have as many seats in the, you know, in the kitchen or in the general stands. All of those factors matter. And when you remove those pieces and just assume that it will work, it often doesn't. So I've often have to be the bearer of bad news when people say, well, why won't Moncton work? Why won't Fredericton work? Why won't St. John work? Why won't Charlottetown work? And the problem is that each one of those markets individually is too small, and they don't have the corporate base. And we heard this argument in Halifax forever about a CFL team and how a CFL team would work in Moncton because people are going to travel. Well, the reality is people don't travel. They don't. You do. So thank you. But you don't make up a, you know, you're a unicorn. You're really special. You know, most people will get on a bus for 12 minutes or they'll drive 15 minutes. They'll be upset if they have to wait, park 10 minutes away and have to walk. Like, that's the reality of what most people go through. So the one I do think could work though is I do think St. John's has potential. And the reason I think St. John's has potential is because it's somewhat isolated, and because it's so hard to get to, and because there is a bit of a corporate base there that feels like that's their thing and their Newfoundland, and if I had to pick one other market that would become our rival, and have another team east of, you know, hopefully Quebec in the next couple of years, it would be St. John's.
So
sure.
Do you think the travel challenge with Newfoundland being an island is surmountable?
Listen, we fly to every game. So what difference does it make if we fly? It's way easier to fly to St. John's than it is to fly to Victoria. So I don't think it matters in the sense. We've already dealt with travel. We've already dealt with the idea that we've got to fly everywhere. We don't have a bus trip. So to add a bus trip, to be honest, it doesn't really make a huge difference. These guys get used to flying. They get used to that. Sitting in a bus for 5 hours is not better than, you know, getting to the airport, waiting for an hour, getting on a flight for 2 hours, and getting somewhere. It really doesn't matter. I think it's more about the market being, having the right conditions to allow it to be successful. And to you were right. Like, it's got to be a big deal in the city that you're in, and it's got to feel like it matters.
Okay, I'll get to work.
Yeah, good.
George Street FC. I think this gentleman here was next. Are you sure?
Yeah. No. I got a short one.
Okay, go for it.
Okay. Now, Denton's could go in any direction, so you might want to get, yeah.
Okay.
Vocal in.
Okay, no, I just wanted to pick up on what Patrice said about thanking the staff and what Trevor said about thanking the staff behind the staff. So I want to make sure we all thank the staff behind the staff behind the staff, which is also Garrison, but I'm also speaking about Anthony and Gary, who have been doing this for so many years, putting so much into this, building the culture themselves. And I want to hear Derek say that he believes in them just like Patrice does.
I believe in you guys. Yes, you're fantastic. No, but Denton, I'm glad you said that. Listen, these two guys, and there's others that are part of our group, have been around from the genesis of this. And, you know, I think one day we will get there where we are a big fucking deal in the country, and it'll be you guys. You know, it'll be the people that followed it from the very beginning, that, you know, spent the time, you know, took hours to interview people, to interview players, give players a voice, let people know who they were, what their stories were, what they're about. That stuff matters. And you know, I am grateful that you guys have done this, and you know, thank you. And you've had a bit of the last half hour, you've been able to do nothing but drink, so this is not really fair. Yeah.
I can't see it through my tears.
It was more for Gary, but. You're a bit of an asshole, actually.
So my name's Trevor, and a few months back, the website True North Footy came out with results of a survey that they had posted asking supporters of the various clubs throughout the league who were their top three least favorite teams in the league. And outside of the bizarre result of Cavalry fans having a five-way tie for third, no other team in the league had supporters list the Wanderers in their top three. And given everything that we've seen over the past five seasons in this league with regards to Forge, and how it's very hard to not argue that they are clearly the villains of the league, I think that survey is as sort of a microcosm, but also listening to everything that we've heard tonight from Patrice, from you, and from the fans here, and from everything that we've seen, it's pretty clear we're the heroes of the league.
I'll go with that, yeah.
So how does it feel to be the owner of the heroes of the league?
Well done. I have an answer that you might not like, but I've got to say, I love it, obviously. I think we work really hard at trying to do things right. We try to do things that we can feel good about, that we can sleep at night. We try to make every decision in a respectful, kind of honorable way. So for that, I'm glad that people respect us and that they like us. And it's really you guys that they're talking about, not us. They're talking about the fans. But I will say that I'm a little pissed off because really the reason why teams aren't liked is because they win. So once we start winning, then I guarantee you we'll start to be on some of those other fan groups' least liked teams. Even though Ottawa now may have gone to the top of the villain list without winning, which is a unique feat. But I'd like to get into that list by winning and beating those other guys. So listen, I've got to tell you guys, like, I respect the hell out of Forge. I think Forge have done things really well. I don't think Forge breaks rules. I don't think Forge messes around. I think Forge just really knows what they're doing. And I think Bobby's a fantastic coach. I think the reason we hired Patrice is he's the closest guy to Bobby that there is in Canada. I think he's gonna be better than Bobby one day, but that is what you need. You need a individual who can inspire, can recruit, can really do something with the clay that he's able to bring in. And you know, I think Forge remains the team we're chasing. You know, we've talked a lot about Ottawa. I think Ottawa will do what Ottawa does, but I would have no doubt that Forge will be there at the end. Then that's the team we're gonna have to, you know, tackle and bring down if we wanna raise the trophy, right?
Awesome answer. Anybody else?
Thank you. One other thing, Trevor, on your answer that you didn't say was that Valor fans rated their own team as one of those the teams that they didn't like the most. Yeah, I don't have that grace. So my question's around expansion. I know we talked a little bit about potential opportunities here in Atlantic Canada. There's been other bids that have been listed. Kelowna, I know Regina, there was a bit of an update. I guess there's also one in Windsor. Any insight on what actual teams might be actually starting and what the timeline for those might be looking like? And can we expect any other bids in the next little bit?
Yeah, again, I can't, you know, it's not my place to talk about kind of the league business. I'll get in trouble. But what I will say is that I'm very bullish that we will have multiple expansion teams before 2026. I think, you know, we've weathered a few storms. We've had some ups and downs. We've kind of worked through some challenges in some of the cities that we have teams. I think the eight teams that we have now are on very solid footing. I think, you know, bringing in new ownership in York was really important to solidify that club for the long term. And there's going to be some announcements in the next, you know, 6 months, 9 months around how we can continue to grow. But this league will get to, you know, 12, 14, 16 teams in the next 6, 8, 10 years. It's just not rushing it for the sake of rushing it, but really making sure we've got the people and the right situations to start, not have to stop, but continue to grow. And I am excited and confident about that and where we're going to end up.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi. Let's talk about the Cup for the moment, which for some reason in Canada is called the Championship, which never made sense to me because it's the Cup, really. Yeah. But so I know we have a preliminary round, so let's not get ahead of ourselves. We need to beat the League One Quebec winner. But let's get ahead of ourselves, and if we manage that, we got TFC potentially coming in. What do you think are our chances to take down TFC under John Herdman?
Well, I'm really excited. I think we worked really hard in the off season to change the format of the Canadian Championship. So everyone remembers last year we ended up having to go up to York and play that first round. So we were really excited that we got it bumped back a little bit so that we could host round one. Really excited that we got it to two legs for the second round so that knowing that that would be the time we could play the MLS teams to, you know, guarantee our, you got to remember for our players, a lot of which grew up in Ontario cheering for TFC, the chance for them to go play at BMO Field is a really cool opportunity. But then for us to be able to host those guys here, we did it a couple years ago. It was probably one of the most, those two games, the Toronto game and the Montreal game, for everybody that was at them, you know, are probably two of the more magical nights we had at the Wanderers grounds. And you know, we were fortunate enough to be competitive in both of those games where we actually could feel the opportunity that we could have won. And they're special. I think it's one of the special things in this sport. It's unique to soccer, football. It doesn't exist in a lot of the other sports that you can compete against teams at different levels than you. And it's magic when it comes together. So I have some preliminary dates of when those games could be that we would be in the second round. I think it'd be great to, you know, have those games in June versus too early in the season when they're freezing cold. But we're really excited. But you're right, we have to get through round one. And you know, as we've experienced in the past, you know, we met Patrice because Vaughn almost knocked us out of the Canadian Championship a few years ago. So those teams, just like we think we'd like to have a chance against TFC, they think they have a chance against us, and we're going to have to make sure we bring forward a great effort to beat them and get the opportunity to play TFC.
Any chance of a charter flight again?
Yes.
Derek Martin, trouble.
You get me in trouble. I am a glutton for punishment, so I have made a call already and started the process. We will see if we can actually, let's wait, let's try to get that opportunity first, and if we get it, then I think a charter flight to Toronto full of Wanderers fans would be a pretty special, it's not an event I'd want to miss, that's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Bring back Marvin to sell the tickets.
Yes, yes.
Does anybody else have a question for Derek? That's a poor man away with. Okay, looks like we're good.
Awesome, thanks guys. Thanks so much for coming
out. Thank you, everyone.
Time to drink up, folks. Get out. Out to box.